Welcome back to JK Moto Podcast, a motorcycle podcast for the everyday rider, covering current bike and racing news and specializing in
everyday motorcycle content.
Track days, club racing, and great entertainment. We truly do it all. And this week we are brought to you by, if you can see in the background, JK Moto Entertainment, which is your one-stop shop for all your racing, track day, club racing, and everything else. Questions, answers, all of it. We got it all. Follow us on YouTube. Correction on that. Subscribe on YouTube. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at JK Moto Entertainment. That's the spiel. How'd you like
that
it?
That was good.
Was it pretty good?
That really got me into the mood.
Yeah?
That
really wow. got me. Wow. It's all business.
I consent.
I have a cheat sheet. I like to put out the rules just so people know.
Yeah.
Will you stop consenting?
Sorry. I don't know when the legality of the situation gets murky. I want to make sure you guys are on firm legal fitting.
All right, well, some introductions real quick. I've got Kelly over here on my left. You guys know him. He's been here quite often. We are here to cover some MotoGP. We'll get into that in a little bit. And over on my right, I have Joshua. None other than, I'm just going to come out and say it. You're from England at some point in your life.
I am, which makes me like a native motorcycle expert.
Yes, also a native British Grand Prix expert. He knows the track inside and out. He could tell you about every rock in the asphalt.
Yeah, maggots, not maggots.
Maggots. It is maggots.
Maggots and beckets.
It is. Did you Google that, or did it come to you?
No, I heard them say it enough that I.
Okay.
Our resident track expert here.
But is it Tissot or Tissot?
I think it's Tissot.
Tissot.
The fact that British people call it Tissot makes me think that it's supposed to be pronounced a different way.
Okay, so you're saying it's just the British Tissot to make fun of the French?
Like I think so. They're doubling down. Yeah, okay. Yes.
All right. Anyway, so we have a Brit. Am I allowed to say that?
You
are wearing red today.
That's
pretty
good.
You are wearing red. This is perfect.
It's unscripted.
It worked perfectly. Sweet. So we have Brit in the house with us. We were doing MotoGP round. Did we decide what round it was?
I'm going to say 7. Don't check.
I think that was the guess. I think it's round. I think it's round 8 for F1. So
it's got to be 7. Round 7.
One race behind.
Still
us.
Got it.
In England, the UK, Silverstone. Wonderful track. Usually brings a lot of drama. Usually brings some rain and everything else. Today, we didn't really see the rain, per se.
We didn't need to see the rain today.
But there was definitely
some other excitement. We had excitement at home.
There was plenty of other drama. So we're going to get into that. We should go ahead and, I think, roll an intro. And then, quick background. We brought Josh over because Josh is a year and a half old Formula One fan now?
This would be my third season.
Third season, okay, so quite a while. He's been doing Formula One for quite a while, so we brought him on to see if we could convert him over and to just kind of hash out the differences between Formula One and MotoGP. Because I tried watching Formula One and I struggled. For, I think, a lot of the same reasons that you struggle to watch MotoGP, which is mostly that, like, history of the riders.
Yeah. You know, like, you struggle with, like, the rules or just, like, caring about the individuals?
Caring and also a little bit of the, like, the race was a little boring to me. Even without knowing the people, it was just kind of... Anyway, we'll get into that. Let's go ahead and roll an intro, and then we'll get into MotoGP.
My first track day, I got the pictures back, and I was like, I'm never doing that again. On the ground at 100 miles an hour.
He should relatively know. He's been listening to it before then too, and it's been the same, relatively same intro for a long time. But anyway, we are back, and we're ready for some MotoGP. Before we really dive into this whole MotoGP F1 thing, I do have to knock out some fantasy, if that's okay.
Sure.
You're the guest, so everything's going to go through you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of power.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. If you want to stop the show at any point.
Ooh.
Josh, the guest, did you win fantasy this week?
I'm going to go ahead and say no.
Yeah, you didn't. Not even close. Anyway, if you're not following along, this is round 7 of MotoGP. We were in Britain, like I already said. We have a fantasy team. You can find the link for that down in the description. Go check it out. Also, if you're on YouTube, please understand this is going to be like an hour to an hour and a half long, maybe. Maybe only 45 minutes. But either way, I wouldn't expect you to sit in front of your computer screen and just watch that straight, because that takes a lot of time. So Also down in our description is our link to our RSS. I have to be very careful with that. RSS feed, where you can find a link for whatever podcast platform you want to listen on. Go give us a follow over there. Leave us a review. All that great jazz. We got to get into fantasy. So we pick a weekly point winner every week, whoever had the most points for the week. And this week's weekly point winner in our fantasy team is, I guess?
I'm looking at it.
He's looking at it. You want to guess?
I can guess. Marky Marquez.
Well, no, he doesn't know the fantasy names at all.
That's true. I don't know the fantasy team names at all, so I wouldn't be able to guess.
Team number three. Close. Team number one, the guy in first, actually won this week, which that's not always true, but he has been doing pretty good. So Shifty from Canada came in with a whopping 151.5 points this week. Right behind him for the week was me, kept me in fifth place.
There's only two people not above 1,000 points, and I'm one of them.
Out of how many people?
Six.
That's not bad. It's not too bad.
Not terrible. Kelly's doing...
That's because that guy joined after the series started.
You're doing okay. You're doing okay. Anyway, Shifty...
You didn't need to say that.
Shifty, you can hit us up for your weekly prize. And if you haven't joined the fantasy yet, it is not too late. You can come in and probably still beat Kelly and maybe even me.
Careful, I got two boosts left. You never know.
That's true. There are boosts available, and Shifty only has one left. So, that is that. That clap was loud.
That was nice. Good clap.
She can zoom in on me clapping.
So she could keep doing it, yeah.
British GP. Okay, so we have Josh. You have kind of seen some MotoGP in passing before.
I think this was my fourth race.
Fourth race you've ever seen. You weren't here for the sprint yesterday. You didn't get the whole weekend, all the practice and all the...
All the qualifying, all the free practice. Mm-hmm. All the same stuff that overlaps with some similar to F1.
Mm-hmm. So we got to go through qualifying real quick because it was a very interesting grid. Can you pull up the results for that?
Pull up the results for qualifying? Q1 or Q2 or in the FPs?
Just give me Q2. I don't care about Q1. Those guys are slow and...
Fair enough. Q2?
Not great. Q2 is what matters, right? Yeah. Q2 is one of the most important sessions of the weekend. Just to give you a little background, they have two qualifying sessions. So you have one practice session on Friday. Whoever, the top 12 of those goes straight to Q2.
Which means your performance in free practice determines
in practice,
your qualifying?
Yes. Really? So they have FP1 and FP2. In between those two is what they call practice, which is a free practice, but it's practice.
Okay.
And it determines what qualifying session you get to go to. So they send the top 12 from practice straight to the second qualifying session. So those guys are automatically in the top 10, because it saves two spots from Q1.
Okay.
So top 10 in practice.
So Q1 can still, based on your performance, make it into Q2.
Yeah.
Right.
So top 10 in practice, you're automatically guaranteed in the top 12 spots on the grid.
Okay.
Because you're in Q2. Then they have Q1, which is all the guys that weren't in the top 10 in practice. Mm-hmm. The top two from Q1 get to go compete in Q2.
Interesting.
And then you have Q2, which is obviously just your top 12 people
on
the grid.
As opposed to just Q1.
Yes.
Drop the slowest five. Yes. Q2, Q3. Drop the next batch. Q3. All right. That order based on that.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's a little different because if you do real bad in practice, you could go into Q1 and do well and then make it into Q2. You could still qualify in first even if you didn't go straight to Q2. The issue that a lot of people run into there is tire management, because you only get a certain set of tires, like a number of sets of tires for the weekend. Right. So if you use up your soft tire too early because you have to do Q1, you might not have one ready for Q2 or whatever.
Is it still just fastest lap time?
Yeah.
Straight?
Yep.
One lap, fastest time?
Yep.
That's where you land?
Mm-hmm.
How long is the free practice session and then Q1 and Q2? How long are the sessions?
Like 10 to 15 minutes-ish?
So Q1 and Q2 are each 15 minutes. The practice session is about 45. So the practice session, you still have enough time to go do a sprint race or go test some things out. In that last 15 minutes, you'll see everyone come in, grab some soft qualifying, super sticky tires, and they go out and they start doing their time attacks.
Okay.
It's a little different. I enjoy it. It makes it kind of, it's interesting all week. Because even on Friday, you're like, okay, these aren't just free practices. Like, practice matters. Because your guy could or could not get into order.
And that full 45 minutes, whatever your fastest single lap time is, that's where you place.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, for practice, yep.
That's crazy. I mean, it definitely generates a lot more interest because there's like stakes involved in the free practice. Because F1, usually if it's not spring weekend, you've got FP1, FP2, FP3. And performance in those free practices, which are about an hour, I mean literally an hour, there's no stakes. Other than if you crash. Obviously, if you crash or you use up the wrong tires, like that's going to have consequences for qualifying in the race.
Right.
But besides that, your performance is irrelevant. They'll do like they'll do qualification test runs usually on the last pre-practice right before quality just to see like about where they are on their quality setup. And then for the rest of it though, they'll be doing like high fuel runs, low fuel runs. They'll be doing testing. Like you'll see aero like test devices all over the car sometimes.
Yeah, like the weird little pressure sensor.
Yep, they'll have like the flow paint will be on the car. They'll have the sensor, like the sensor rig set up on the car too. And they'll just be doing testing for like all different practices again, because there's no like, you don't lose out on anything just because you perform poorly in practice. And then quality starts and it's Q1, Q2, Q3, one after the other.
And so they just dump out the bottom
five. The bottom five. And then Q2 and Q1 are top 10, or Q2's top 15, leaves the bottom five behind. Then Q1 is the straight 10. And however you perform in Q3, that's your placement on the grid for the start of the race.
Okay. So if you, and that's it, right? In that final session, you're not caring about any of the times.
So you could be 15th in Q1, get to Q2, 10th in Q2, get to Q3, get first.
And yeah. Sorry, brief interruption from the technical difficulties that seem to keep happening here.
It's pretty classic.
It is a great time. Podcast. Yeah, it's a great time. It's a great time. We've been pretty good.
Hey, Cherish, I'm just glad I could be along for the ride. Thanks for bringing me along, man.
Yeah, absolutely. So, anyway, there's a brief look into F1.
Yep.
FP1, FP2, FP3, he said. So you have three full practice sessions.
If it's not a sprint weekend, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Then a sprint kind of takes up some other room. Yes. Okay. So a little different. Yeah, so I appreciate it. Like I said, it brings you in on Friday. It makes it worth it to watch some stuff on Friday. Because free practice one is great. And then you have practice. And free practice two actually usually happens on Saturday morning before qualifying. And then you have qualifying, and then you have the sprint. So Saturday is like action-packed.
Yeah.
You got stuff going on all day. Compared to Sunday, you're just sitting around waiting for the race. And you've got Moto2 and Moto3 races in there. So our qualifying grid this week really surprised me, because I did not get to watch qualifying, much like you. I don't know if you did. Did you watch
it?
Did
not.
So when I came in for the sprint yesterday, I watched the sprint, or 2 days ago, whatever. I was very surprised. We had quite an interesting starting grid. Now, I know you don't have background on many of the riders.
Right.
So there's that. But to see, what do we got? Quartararo
in first. Alex Marquez second. Bagnaia third. Mark down in fourth.
Which that was the one that killed me, was Mark being on the second row. I'm a Mark fan, so it kills me for that. But also just the fact that, like, I saw red, and it wasn't the top two. It was third and fourth, and Mark was specifically back behind everyone. Button.
It was 63-93, not the other way around.
Yeah, exactly. And then we had Aldeguer, which is kind of becoming a normal thing. We'll talk about him a little bit later, because he had a question for me on that. And then we had Jack Miller, which is another big surprise. So, I mean, we have three Ducatis, or four Ducatis. Second through fifth is Ducatis. That makes sense. That's pretty standard. But to have a Yamaha in first, a Yamaha in sixth, and then I believe we had...
Yeah, Luca Marini down in eighth, Zarco, and then Morbidelli. So, yeah. You know, 8 and 9.
So 8 and 9 are Hondas, and Aprilia in 11th, and another Yamaha down in 12th. So
Zeki was down 11th.
Yeah. But we had three Yamahas in Q2. That things are changing. I know, once again, I'm going to say this a lot. You don't have a whole lot of background and a whole lot of history, so I understand that. And but to see three Yamahas finish in the top 12 in qualifying, or in, you know, in practice, whatever, to be in the top 12 at the start of the race is pretty intense. So Quartararo doesn't really have a hold in the championship this year, or at least didn't, so we thought. He's down in eighth in the championship, only holding down 59 points, and we got Mark Marquez up in first with 196. So, like, the spread on that, you get 140-some-odd points, or just under. It's too wide. Quartararo doesn't have a shot. So his only goal this year, I think, is to help Yamaha build a bike for next year and maybe get a couple gold medals throughout the weekends, right? Which I'm sure a lot of that is the same. As far as I've always understood, MotoGP and F1 are relatively similar. There are slight differences and everything else. But insert the sprint. You didn't watch the sprint, so Kelly and I are going to talk about the sprint for a little bit, which
a whole lot.
There wasn't a ton of drama.
Yeah, except for watching, David Quartararo be unpulled and slowly get eaten alive by a field full of Ducatis, which slowly broke my heart more and more as, you know, the race went on. But we're not going to talk about that. We're going to keep pushing.
Race. So Silverstone's an interesting track, because there aren't huge crazy straights. There are still straights big enough that, you know, Ducatis are able to come in. They got that straight line power. They're able to take everyone out. So yeah, we saw Quartararo just kind of slowly fall off and
but at least Alex won.
Get eaten. But hey, Quartararo also put up a fight.
He did.
Right, like everywhere he goes, he was fighting out there. That's why obviously he made it qualified first for the second week in a row. and put up a great fight during the sprint, just couldn't quite hold out, which is fine. Insert, that's really all I want to cover for the race, or the sprint.
That's fair.
Cool. I want to talk about the race. The race was, I haven't seen a race that crazy in a while.
Part one or part two of the race?
Both. Both. So, once again, this is Wednesday. We are a spoiler show. I'm just going to put that out there. If you haven't watched the races yet or you want to go watch them without knowing what's going on, we're 100% going to call out the winner. I think we already kind of did with the sprint. So, sorry. Not sorry.
Surprise, surprise.
But yes, we get to the race. We're in England. There's no rain. Beautiful weather. It's sunny. I don't think that ever happens.
No, that's not supposed to happen.
Yeah, it's supposed to be the wild, crazy.
Yeah, for a full 2 hours. Sunny yeah. weather, no clouds.
Beautiful day over there.
That's the one day of the
in
year.
England.
Yeah, exactly.
And we've got a Yamaha in first on the grid. We've got three Yamahas up in top 12. We've got an Aprilia up there. We've got two Hondas up there. This is crazy. Juan Zarco is coming right off his race win from last weekend.
I think he started at ninth.
Starting in ninth, but like he's got that high of the race win last week.
Winning the French GP, winning the homeland.
Alex Marquez knows that he needs to. So.
Because at this point, they have like a 27 point gap between him and his brother Marquez for the 1-2 in the championship standing. So he knows he needs to start closing that gap.
He's got to keep beating Mark, right? So here's the deal. Alex Marquez won his first ever MotoGP race like 2 weekends ago. First ever.
Wow.
He's always kind of been behind his brother. And in Moto2, he finally did it after his brother left. He won a championship. Great. In the past, he hasn't necessarily had the talent, or at least hasn't shown it. This year, he's finally been starting to come out and kind of show that. He's been getting a lot of P2s. He called himself Mr. P2. It was a great time, right? Great time. But what we've seen in the past is like dudes that hold down a consistent top five and never wreck out can pull a championship win off, mm-hmm. right? Because they're going to get those points every weekend.
Yeah.
So we were doing that pretty much. And Alex Marquez actually held the championship for a couple different weekends. And then last weekend in France, he crashed out.
There were a few weekends where Mark himself from the lead crashed out. So it was like, well, number two has consistent points. Crash out, you get no points or very little points. If you get back into the points, well, P2 is now leading the championship by 1 point.
Correct. So then last week, he kind of gave all that up. Mark took a pretty big lead. It was about a 20-point gap, like you mentioned. So anyway, at that point, Alex, there's in his head, has to beat Mark every weekend. Again, right? He's back to that momentum. He can't just sit there in P2 anymore because now there's a pretty big gap. He's got to get those points back. So I think that's what we saw was, one, he qualified better. He qualified in second. And then, two, right off the jump, he had a great start. Like, it was a great start, kind of, for the straight part.
Yeah, it was a it was a fantastic start. He was doing actually really, really well up until he wasn't.
Yeah, and then he definitely wasn't. I mean, he stood up.
Yeah.
I saw you stand up.
I was trying to figure out what happened. I couldn't believe I was seeing what I saw. It was like watching that rain race all over again.
Yeah.
Because the bike was mostly up, and then he goes to like turn it, and it's like...
It was just gone.
Gone.
There was no bike there. There was nothing. It was actually very strange. Alex Marquez is a great start. Jumps off the start. Takes off for the first corner. Some other things are happening. You got Bagnaia coming up. You got Mark coming up. Mark's looking like he's trying to take the inside from him, which is exactly what happened. But Alex just...
It was like by himself when that happened.
Yeah. He's completely over there. I mean, you had the question of like being offline. Do you lose grip over there?
Yeah, racing line. How much that impacted his ability to turn in?
Yeah, which I don't think so. There's a in the first corner, especially in every race. This is what I love about MotoGP, especially compared to F1, is I can be six bikes wide going into the first corner.
Yeah.
So like it is hugely different. There's no
six bikes wide and leaned over.
Yeah, and fully leaned over, and like obviously one line's gonna be faster than the other, but you can 100% if you can carry the corner speed. You can stick around the outside the entire time. You could go outside to inside. You can, like, there are people that'll hang out wide and come in later to cut under. There's a bunch of different moves you can do. That's why I love it. Mm-hmm. But Alex Marquez ended up just dumping the bike. I thought he was out. I thought that was that. His bike went, I mean, he was coming, like, fresh off the straight, barely tapped the brakes, it looked like, and just slid that thing all the way over the air fence. Like, I thought he was done for. Insert a few laps later, what I think... Not even a lap and a half.
One lap.
Yeah, maybe. Like one lap later.
Yeah. Big Mark.
We see Big Mark go down. So right before that, we did see off in the corner, Elation Morbidelli out. Right?
Yeah, Elation Morbidelli.
They never showed it.
They showed the aftermath of it, yeah.
Yeah, the replay, yeah.
So
I think that is what caused a red flag to be called.
That's where they found the oil.
Yeah, that's where the oil was from. Because that's what confused me. So Mark went down, he goes over to pick up his bike. And the safety, like the corner workers are coming over and they're
flagged.
Like, they're looking, they're like, hey, there's red flag. So they're trying to tell them, like, don't even worry about it.
Yeah.
And I was like, There's no way that someone just saw Mark go down and was just like, red flag.
Yeah.
Like, that's not, it can't work like that.
Yeah. Two Marquez down, hit the flag.
But, yeah, so we ended up having a restart on the race.
I was very interested in restart because, like, I wasn't sure what the restart procedure would be. Because when Mark went down, I tried to get back on his bike. I was curious if they let Marquez, like Alex Marquez, also restart because red flag is generally a restart.
Right.
And what the grid position would be. And because of, like, the race was so new, they said, like, no three laps hadn't been done yet. Yeah. We just fully blown race restart, send it from there. I was like, interesting.
Yep.
And you saw Alex doing that, like, quick change when he got back to the pit to, like, swap out his suit.
Yeah, he ran off, got a new suit. Mark brought his bike back. Morbidelli brought his bike back, was able to restart. Everyone was able to restart because they just said a full new, fresh. And that brings in the question. I think at that point you are allowed to just have a new bike. Everyone's allowed to get new tires, I think. I don't know. I'm not.
So my question is, did Aleix restart?
Yeah, he was 100%.
Because he also re-crashed out, didn't he?
Yes. Yep. Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's rough.
But
run it back.
I thought, so we were talking earlier, we have a sprint every week, mm-hmm. and it's almost killed me as a MotoGP fan because I lose my, like, interest in the race.
Right.
So a lot of times the race will have drama at the very beginning, and then you'll have, you know, let's say it's a 25-lap race. I'll have mm-hmm. 5 laps of drama, and then 10 to 15 laps of nothing, and then 5 more laps of drama, and I'm done. Yeah. So in that 10 to 15 laps of nothing, you're just sitting there like...
watching a bunch of formation laps?
Yeah. Everyone's kind of just chilling. Everyone's trying to conserve tires.
Yeah.
Maybe someone's doing something. There's slow gains. But it really gets difficult because yesterday I had 10 laps of just action the entire mm-hmm. time. No hold bar, just gone, going for it. So I kind of thought when we restarted this race, I was like, okay, everyone's just going to calm down. Everything's going to go perfectly smooth. This is going to be a boring race, and I invited Josh over for no reason at all. That's kind of what I was expecting. However.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, that was pretty dramatic.
Surprise, surprise.
I think it was a good race.
It was a good race.
I think it was a great race. Not only just from, like, the drama in the beginning, but we had some great passing.
The thing about the passing, there was passing everywhere up the grid. In the mm-hmm. front, there was action. Mm-hmm. In the midfield, in the action. Even a few times at the back, there was action.
Well, and we had two of our, like, top riders, Bagnaia and Marquez.
Yeah.
Both go wide. And put themselves in the back, which...
I think Bagnaia was following Mark. Mark made the mistake, and Pecco followed him. I think that's what happened.
Didn't Mark fall back to 12th because of that?
Yes. He did, yes.
And then he climbed his way all the way back.
To third.
Like, even if you just played the highlights of that race, the last three laps of that race would all be in the highlights.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that battle between third and fourth.
Or yeah, and with Morbidelli.
Third and fourth, yeah. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Between him and Mark.
Yeah.
Pretty epic.
It was a good time. It was a good time.
I mean, I think Jarko ran out of laps... which was a good thing.
He finished second, though, didn't he?
Yeah, mm-hmm. because if they had more laps, I think Marquez was coming for second place on Zarco.
Because Zarco at the end had, what, just over a second and a half on him?
Nah, I think he had a little bit more than that.
It was less than that.
It was less than that?
It started at a second and a half with 2 laps left, which is when we were talking about it. It dropped down to just under or just over a second.
Because they were also showing the time between Mark and...
If Zarco had more laps, I do think Mark would have came and got him.
Possibly. Morbidelli surprised me, though, because he came in and was fighting with Mark.
He was down with Mark.
Which will pull Mark back from Zarco.
The issue is... It was so bad at one point toward the end. Like, Alex was, like,
close. I mean, it was a photo finish. It was a photo finish.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we looked at it.
Mark only won by the front axle.
Like I said, it was... That other front tire was, like, right...
That was exciting.
Yeah.
Right there next to the front tire.
Like, just a little more throttle than he would have been.
All MotoGP races are like that. None are ever disappointing. Now you're a MotoGP fan. It's done. Yeah. You've been converted.
It's the investment in the drivers.
We got some free.
Like, you say Leclerc, Max Verstappen, Yuki Tsunoda, and those are, like, names that, like, immediately get an emotional response from me. Right now, the only reason I don't have any investment in MotoGP is you say, like, Marky Marquez, and I'm like, oh, I know that guy is really good.
Right.
Any other name. And I'm like, that guy sounds like he could be Italian. And that's, like, that's the end of my connection with
him. He's actually probably Spanish. But
which is maybe even worse. I'm not even connecting the right.
That's fair.
European culture.
I had the same issue when I first started. I think the only reason that I know any of the characters when I first started is because I watched that YouTube, like, There Can Only Be One, which kind of gave you, like, an abbreviated season recap from a bunch of riders in championship contention, and I stopped following some of them, like, as they fall out of championship contention. So it's not as, like, dramatized as, like, Drive to Survive, which made me, like, a rabid fan mm-hmm. in F1 when I first started, mm-hmm. but it did get me the emotional investment in some of the characters.
Yeah, it brings you... I like the show. Get your foot in the door. Yeah, because it absolutely introduces you to the people. Mostly just your top contenders, though, for the next season.
Yeah.
Because it goes through, like, the top five.
You're not getting a breakdown like the Haas equivalent team, like, no one, like in MotoGP, yeah. MotoGP. Like, no one's caring.
Yeah. But it is good.
No offense to Haas. I love Haas.
I had a question. Where
did it go? Nope, it's gone forever.
It's gone forever.
Was it England-related or motorcycle-related?
There was an England-related question also. Shit. I was going to make fun of you for not knowing the other European people. Because, like, you're from Europe, you should know.
But I'm British.
Yeah.
Which means I don't know.
You just hate all of the rest of them. Yeah, you
they're across across the rest of the waters.
They're continental.
Yeah.
Yes. I know what that means.
That's different. They're in the continent.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
You see?
Yeah. The UK, the United Kingdom, has a united...
Yeah. That's united. Yeah, and there's some island. Water, and then there's the rest of the Europeans.
And it's the water that's the critical point. They're on the other side of it. Therefore, they're not...
The Atlantic Ocean.
No, that's us. That's us. We're on that side
of the water. That is still an applicable point.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The water in the other direction.
It's smaller water.
The smaller water. Smaller water. But it is water that does count.
It is still water, though.
Okay.
I think. I never did the test myself. Science has.
We'll get the Europeans actually mad at us now.
There we go. Yeah, I mean, what a race for you to start out on. One, it's in England, your hometown, your home turf, you know.
Silverstone is a great track.
It is.
It is a beautiful track.
It is tons of fun watching.
Very aesthetically pleasing, the layout. You're right, though. Like, no like, huge straights. Like, it's not like Bahrain for you F1 fans out there. So it's not like straight after straight after straight, getting to max speed like immediately, but the cornering's really good.
Yeah.
I think the thing I like most about Silverstone is, unlike a lot of tracks, there is no single point where I'm like, why is that a part of the racetrack? That is such a terrible part of the racetrack, like almost all of Miami.
At
least Silverstone, like, you're like, the whole time you're like, this is a good track.
I agree with that. Yeah, 100%. Definitely agree with that. I also, it's interesting you bring up a point where you're like, why is this part of the track? I've never had that thought before.
That is a, I won't say it's a common thing, but the first chicane in Miami, that's like a common, like, why is that a racetrack? Like, it's terrible. It's a blind chicane.
Oof.
So famously Max Verstappen went over it and took out a baller. They have a baller there in the middle of the chicane because otherwise you cannot see the right-hander.
Oof.
So Silverstone's great there? Yeah, because Silverstone's great because you don't have any real sections like that, so the whole time you feel like the drivers are really, the riders are able to, like, maximize the machine and really put the racetrack to its paces.
Well, and what I like about it, which is pretty much what you're saying, but it is technical almost the entire time.
Yes.
Right, which is why we saw this weekend specifically, I mean, first, second, and third are all different manufacturers in the race.
It's a great result. That's a great result for a race.
There was a point where the top three were not Ducatis, and I was like, I wish this was the podium. And then, you know, obviously
there was a point where
snuck his way up in there.
The top three were Japanese.
Yep.
We haven't seen that since 2019, maybe.
Yeah,
it's been a very long time. That was awesome.
I was curious to know KTM's. I thought they figured it out. Thought Matt Vignales had something.
Yeah, did Pedro down in sixth?
Yeah, I'll say for Vignales, I'm not gonna lie,
he'll get there. I'm telling you, Maverick Vignales will have one weekend this year where he does okay. But we got to talk about your boy, Quartararo.
Oh, man.
The big drama. This is, like, I think probably the biggest drama of the weekend. As I was mentioning earlier, he doesn't have a play in the championship. You know, he's 140 points down. He's just not there, and he knew that. He's been on this Yamaha that just couldn't hang for all of last year and most of this year so far. But recently, we've been seeing him put in the work.
He was standing on business. He was hanging today.
Yeah, absolutely, and get the qualifying done. And then after that, so at the beginning of the race, before the race start or the restart, I thought it was just going to be a repeat of the sprint. Because yesterday, he just got eaten up. He just got gobbled down by Ducatis. I kind of expected that. You know, I saw Alex take off, Mark take off, and Bagnaia take off, and looked at it, they were all going to swallow him up. He might have a little bit of fight for each one of them individually, but within the first five laps, he'd be down and under and out. Insert race restart. Cool. Now we got another chance. Quartararo's on fire.
He wasn't having any of that.
Yeah, he just took off.
He was like,
He was putting a second on second place every lap.
Yeah, I think it came off and he was like, fastest lap. So I will say he was on a soft front, which had a big thing to do with it, right? Him and Zarco and Bezzecchi were all on soft fronts. Mm-hmm. And that plays more into your Zarco might not have been able to hold it any longer. I think that's a super key role there. But Quartararo went on the soft front on purpose because he knew that he had to go clean some air, get out in front, and then hold it down, and thought he could nurse those tires till the end. And I think he could have if he had not ran into the issue that he did.
Yeah.
Because he was doing great. And I think the other thing, too, is that behind him you have Alex Marquez, you have Marc Marquez, both of which wrecked out mm-hmm. right before the start. And that's got to mm-hmm. mess with you mentally.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like if you're Alex Marquez and you come in for a restart, you're like, okay, I can get just as good of a start, but I have to make sure I brake on time because I can't do that again.
It seemed to mess with maybe Alex a little bit. It did not look like it had any impact on Mark.
Yeah, Mark's
he's built it.
He different. Quite literally did not look like it made. He was out there fighting with inches between him and
so I'll do it again on him.
Yeah,
yeah, and he wouldn't. He yeah.
He has.
If you start watching, you'll get a feel for that.
There's a lot of controversy.
Very Max Verstappen-esque. Like for F1, Max Verstappen, very similar.
They've actually been compared quite often.
I can see that.
Yeah.
For sure.
Mark, I love Mark because I'm a fan. I mean, you can see my flag over there on the wall.
There it is, right there on the wall.
Yeah.
But also because I do think that Mark brings, I don't want to say trauma, but he brings to the racetrack exactly what a fan wants.
He brings the aggression.
Yeah.
He'll always bring it.
He will 100% race his heart out every single time.
You're getting
to
a show.
To yeah. his detriment, even.
Yeah.
Which is like, kind of sucks as a fan. So I'm like, yes, I want you to go win that race, Mark, but also think about the championship. If you just hold down third, you'll be okay. But if you go first and then get wrecked out by someone or wreck yourself out because you're pushing too hard, like.
Yeah. Yeah, but I could win, though.
He could win, though.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah, I forgot about that part. Yeah, my bad. He could win. It's insane. But anyway, so Quartararo's up there, big pushing. Alex might be messed with a little bit because of that thing. Like you said, Mark didn't really look like he was getting messed with, but he supposedly might be having some Ducati front-end problems.
Who?
Mark. The GP25 in general.
Yeah, whenever Mark rides, it doesn't look like that. So.
Bagnaia's whole thing is that his bike sucks, and Mark can just ride through it and make it look fine.
I will say that, you know, there may be some truth to that. If one rider is just really good, he can mask the problems of the thing he's riding on, mm-hmm. and the other rider we have seen that before.
And Bagnaia is also like
a two-time
extremely talented.
He's also a two-time world champion.
I think we watched two races together last year, and in both those races, I remember you guys talking about Bagnaia. Yeah. Was he in the run for the first in the championship
he
last
was.
Year?
100%. Yeah, okay. Up till the last race.
Exactly. I remember that was like he was the championship leader. So yeah. Like
Bagnaia, he's good. Yeah, there's been saying he has not been performing this year, and if it could be reasons to the bike, it could be maybe marks in his head. It could be a lot of reasons, right? But he mm-hmm. is really good. Yeah. And I don't want anyone to take away from that. He thinks that Ducati is like a plus two modifier, and anybody on Ducati.
Oh, I see. You see, Bagnaia is like average of the pack, but the Ducati brings him up to the front.
I think that Bagnaia is the best Ducati rider, or was for the past few years.
Before Marquez
got there. I do think that Marquez has played a huge role in his not being good anymore. Not in that Marquez is so much better, but in that it has taken a mental toll on Bagnaia because the garage has shifted to Mark. And it's all Mark.
He was the number one.
And Mark is also like something to know about Mark. Mark works just as hard off the grid as he does on the grid. He is pulling sponsors all over the place. He tries to get attention from fans. Like he is he knows how to make money. Mm-hmm. He's a very talented motorcycle racer in all aspects of the uh-huh. of the ride, which in modern world, part of being a talented motorcycle racer and being competitive, not just competitive, but making money and mm-hmm. making a living is being good on camera right. and hunting down those sponsorships. And it's the stuff that we don't like to talk about.
Have you seen that smile?
Yeah, right. But all the money-making stuff that happens in the background, Mark is very good at that.
Mm-hmm.
He's also really talented. Like, he's also just a dang good rider.
Yeah.
But he's a six-time MotoGP world champion, so he deserves the camera time, but he will get camera time no matter where he is on the grid. Part of that is because of the aggression that we're talking about, how much he just chases a win.
You look at him, you will see something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the other part is that I do think he does genuinely care about his sponsors and making sure they get the camera time that they deserve, which is what they're ultimately paying him for. So, yeah, Bagnaia, though, like, Bagnaia is a great rider. He has done very well. I do, personally, yes, I do think that Ducati has kind of fluffed him a little bit just so that it's fluffed everyone else. We'll get into Aldegar here in a minute because I have words on that. But there is talent there. I just, where I say the fluff, I don't necessarily mean that he sucks, but I do mean that if you put him on a different bike that wasn't as competitive,
yeah,
I don't think he'd be up there at
he,
all.
He might not be like a champion.
Exactly. Like, yeah, he like might win a couple here or there, yeah. But he has been brought up on Ducati, through Ducati. He's been in the factory for just about as long as anyone else now. Mm. So he's, you know, he's been their king. Their I call him the robot because the way he rides is very... Not so much anymore, but...
I'll say that doesn't sound like a compliment.
Yeah.
No, Irvine is so much like he'll put his head down and bang out the fastest lap times he ever did see.
Yeah.
Like, no.
Also in so much that, like, you know, if you wanted a modern-day robot to, like, fold your clothes, you would have to set the shirt down in front of the robot perfectly.
That's the same thing. That's
yeah.
It's definitely not a compliment.
Yeah, it's not. No. No. But I call him the robot because when the conditions are perfect, he was unstoppable.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely unstoppable. Because he would go out and every single lap, like, we're talking... Some of these riders, and I'm sure it's very similar over in F1, but, you know, their lap times, lap to lap, are, like, some of them have huge gaps. They'll go fast, slow, mm-hmm. as the tire wears off, they get slower and slower. Mm-hmm. Bagnaia was a man that if he had every condition set up perfectly, he was ready to go, he was in tune with the bike, in tune with himself, it was just lap after lap after lap. We're talking every lap within a couple hundredths mm-hmm. of each other.
Tire's falling away, doesn't matter.
Yeah, tire's gone, doesn't matter, perfectly fine. Just
fuel
boom,
going
boom,
down,
boom, boom,
matter.
Boom. We're talking 20 laps in a row that are all 137.8 something. Like, insane. So that's why I call him the robot. And it's not a compliment.
But like that, it definitely is.
Consistency.
Right?
Yeah,
he can
ride a bike, and he is a competitive racer. The issue is, and where he gets the other half of that robot name, is that if the conditions aren't absolutely perfect,
mm-hmm.
I often feel like he just doesn't perform well at all.
You get shirt origami.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, that's Bagnaia, which, unfortunately, you mentioned he was kind of following Mark. I don't necessarily disagree with you. Although there was a couple bikes between them when he went out.
I just found it odd that both, like, you watched a whole grid hit that turn, only the red bikes fall out.
Yeah, both, way. it was kind of,
I thought
almost like they were going to the pits,
like,
or something.
I didn't know there was a few bikes behind him. I thought, like, he was following Mark. Mark broke too deep, went too wide maybe. Following Mark also broke too deep, goes too wide. I didn't realize there were bikes between them, because it just looked like the whole grid's making this sweeping right. Except for these red bikes.
It is funny that you say that, because they almost follow the exact same line when they're off the track.
That's why I thought, like, oh, he's fine. He's fine.
It wasn't just two went off.
He's like,
it did look like they followed the same line.
If he could do it on the same bike,
yeah,
I can do
it on the same
bike. I thought that's what
the
robot
was.
That robot. Exactly. One, so it could have been, because once again, it's hard to tell from the camera angles, but a lot of times they are, you know, like it was... Maybe Mark and Pecco with a couple of bikes right here. So, yeah, absolutely. Could have been he was planning on going to take the outside with Mark. Mm-hmm. If Mark can do it, I can do it. We got the same bike. We should be able to do it. And what do you know? Mark can't do it. Neither can I. They follow the same line out. So, 100%. But then a couple laps
shocked
after that.
Pikachu face. What?
Yeah.
How could this have happened? Who could see this guy?
But a couple laps after that, Bagnaia, unfortunately, out of nowhere, tucks the front. And so this is why I'm starting to kind of believe this whole front end issue the Bagnaia keeps bringing up, is because he's tucked the front. Mark tucked the front today. Mark tucked the front a couple weeks ago. Mark has actually tucked the front quite a bit this year. And when he's on his game,
like,
he's on his freaking game.
I think
he's
crashed like twice or three times, like, outside of this race.
Yeah. Well, and this weekend, he actually put it down a couple times in the weekend during
FP1. I'm counting during the sprint of the race. I haven't been looking at FP1 or qualifying.
Which is fine. But I do think there might actually be something to say for that. It just cracks me up because Bagnaia came out. If you haven't seen the quote, go check it out. But he came out and he's like, there's an issue with this bike. Mark has been masking it. But that's not really surprising because Mark could ride a tractor and still be fast. He literally said those words. The man could ride a tractor and still be fast on the racetrack. I was like, yeah, it's my boy. That's what's up. And then I just had this weird image of Mark on, like, a really old tractor, like an old, like, Farmall A, and just, mm-hmm. like, out there dragging knee off the side of it. Like, I don't know.
You know, like, whatever they win, par for mile, whatever they call it, like, it's like 1, 2, 3. It's like a tractor and then two other actual bikes.
Maybe. I mean, some tractors, they got the single, or at least the double wheel up close together in the front, you know, mm-hmm. tricycle style.
Yeah, that's true.
That's pretty close,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Like, plus a Farmall is red, so just, it all worked together in my head.
You could just take the tires off the tractor and suddenly it's a motorcycle.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Or race.
Would you keep them on the same side and just lean it? Or would
you have to, because if you have them, like, set, you can't, like, lean it. It's just going to.
Yeah.
You gotta hit that.
So you should design motorcycles. You're on top of it. You got it down.
Tractor motorcycles.
There we go.
Nash's tractor motorcycles.
Heck yeah.
Tractor cycles.
Tractors.
I'd buy one for display.
I would buy one.
You want one for the memes. You need one for the memes.
100%. This is what's going to be behind us next week, which also, real quick, sorry to break everyone, but this is Yamaha R1, or was, before I took all the stuff off of it. Now it could be whatever you want it to be. But if you haven't checked that out yet, episode 1 introduction just came out, and all the fairings are still on it in that episode. So go check that out. I'll have a link up here. It's in one of the corners. I never remember what corner, so it's somewhere. Left, I think right. It's that one.
Nine. My corner? Up here?
Point to it. Where is it? That one. And it is that one, then, I guess. It's going to definitely be that
I'll
one.
I'll take
it with me. Anyway, go check that out. A little bit of background on what this bike is and everything else. It'll continue to be in our background until we get it fixed. And I get my bike back there. Or another new bike in the stable. But
RC390?
Nope. Not doing that. You distracted me. Now I'm thinking about KTMs and tractors and Yamahas, and I'm...
You who said you wanted one for the
big shift? Bagnaia goes wide with Mark. They both go wide. They come back in, and they're coming in at around, what, 12th, 13th-ish, I think?
Yeah, they're in the midfield.
Right, so they're like back there. And then we see our famous Mark Marquez just...
Do his thing.
Start chugging. Plowing the field, if you will, with his tractor. He's back there tractoring along, just plowing people out of the way. Snowplow attached. Going, shoveling the other Ducatis and Yamahas and everything else that's out there. Mostly just the other Ducatis. Behind him is Bagnaia trying to do the same thing, but Bagnaia cannot drive a tractor fast and happens to lay the tractor over because he tucked the front again. So, and per tradition, did he go get the bike and continue riding it? Absolutely not. No, he did not. So that put him down in the standings with a DNF and pull him up. All the way back down, still in third, but we are now 60, but
this,
80,
this gap 70. This gap is gapping now.
72 points behind Mark Marquez down in third place in the championship, which is pretty hefty.
At round seven, that's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot of points. That's a big gap. So that's pretty tough and pretty insane. But did we talk about what happened with Quartararo yet?
Yeah, a little bit.
No, yes, we didn't
talk about what happened. Yeah. We definitely talked about, like, laid the groundwork for this is what he was doing.
Okay, so we got to get back to that.
It looks like, was it braking / ride height device malfunction?
Yeah, so the commentator said rear ride height device malfunction, which means that, like, for anyone that doesn't know, if you guys are just watching, not keeping up very well, and kind of for your info, I already explained this to you, but those ride height devices, they have a rear ride height device that they can engage every time they hit a straight. And then when they come back on, I believe it's actuated by the front brake, or they have to turn it off as they're braking. I don't remember which. But they hit a straight, and they press a button with some form of... Dude, their bikes are insane. Mm-hmm. If you think there's a lot of buttons right here, they have another brake up here and billions of buttons.
It's, for the third tire?
Yeah. For the tractor tire. No. No.
Extra rear brake.
But anyway... You come around to a straight, and I know there's some straights where it's not worth it, and there's other straights where they're actually long enough to use it, but essentially, and if you watch closely, you can see, it's kind of cool once you start to learn all these cool little electronic tricks they have. You start to watch, and you see it happen. But the whole bike, they come around a straight, they come out of the turn, as they're standing the bike up, normally the bike would go up, but it almost doesn't stand up as much because that rear is sinking back down and squatting in, and that rear ride height device is kicking in, so they just have a straight, good old drag bike. Next year, they're going to extend the rear wheel out, too, and it's going to be awesome, so the bikes just can't wheelie. It's not true. That'd be wild, though.
Stop swing arms. Extended swing arms.
Yeah. No. Anyway, they're not going to turn
for anything.
So, supposedly, that thing got locked into position. What we saw was Quartararo is out in the front with a 5 second?
Like five-second gap,
yeah.
He was at least 5 seconds.
He was clicking.
5 second gap. Had built himself this awesome gap. He was good to go. Was on track for his first race win of the year. He's wrecked out of every other time he's been in first, or he's been gobbled up by Ducatis with snowplows. And all I remember is the camera flashed to him, and he threw his hand up. Right? Camera flashes to him, he throws a hand up. And then he gets back on the racetrack. He, like, looks around him real quick. He's back on the racetrack. He's trying to get back into racing. Hits the next turn. And then it's basically just done. He was down and out. Had to go battle through some of the foamy boys or whatever was on the track right there. And then he ended up back on the front straight. Parched the bike and went and probably cried himself to sleep.
Yeah, you can see him. He puts that hand up, and I think he tries, like you said, one more time to fix whatever was wrong. I think after the race, the commentators came on and said it was the ride height device. Yeah, I tried to fix that, And then you could just see he pulled off to the side rather than taking the corner. And you could just like see his whole
body
language collapses. Yeah. And he just starts hitting his helmet. He leans into the bike. Like you can just see he's probably already
The emotion
destroyed because he knows that this is the end.
Yeah. The emotion was just, it was donezo. Which, like, dude, I can't imagine. This is a man that he's a former world champion, by the way. Cordero won back in 2021.
I think so, yeah.
Yep, so because it was
Jorge, Bagnaia, Cordero.
Yeah, so in 2021. He,
on the Yamaha?
Yeah, on the Yamaha. Wow. Yeah, that's where we've come. Like, Ducati, this is like all relatively new.
The Ducati dynasty is relatively new, yeah.
Okay.
Because it wasn't until 2021 or 2022 that they started having so many bikes on the grid. I mentioned there were six Ducatis. Yeah. There used to be eight Ducatis out there, and they were all usually inside the top 10, outside of like one or two every weekend. So we've had, this Ducati dominance is relatively new, but back in 2021, Quartararo won the championship. He was fighting Bagnaia for it. He won it. In 2022, when Bagnaia won, they were still fighting for it. There was it was Quartararo and Bagnaia back then, and then it turned into a Ducati versus Ducati battle from there on out. Since then, since 2022, he just had the bike hasn't been there. And Quartararo is a good rider, I do think. And there's no Ducati inflation going on there. There's no robot stuff going on. There's no Ducati inflation. He's always been on the Yamaha. The Yamaha has always been a bike that has to have a technical circuit to do well. So in the past, there's a good fight because on some circuits, the Ducati would have the advantage. On others, the Yamaha has the advantage because he has that technical circuit. They have better corner speed. They have better agility. They have all that stuff that a technical circuit needs out of a bike,
right.
Whereas the Ducati has a straight line speed. Recently, Yamaha has had so little of that straight line speed that they just cannot keep up. They can't do anything. There's nothing they can do about it. And it's been difficult to watch Quartararo because he is such a high caliber rider that I honestly think the only reason he's still riding a Yamaha is because Yamaha knows that they need him. And they've just been handing him enough money to stick around. They're like, we'll get you a bike, we'll keep you here.
Would he be able to move to a different team if he wanted to?
I think so.
I think any factory would be willing to pick him up. Yamaha's got a pretty good hold on him, and he's taking it because, like I said, I think they're slipping him some pretty good money behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And I don't blame him for it. It's a factory ride.
Yeah.
And it's great money.
Yeah.
And he got his championship. He's like, he's a world champion. He did it. He doesn't necessarily need to do it again. It'd be cool, but he did it. He can say he did the thing. But when you watch him ride, I mean, you look at this weekend, for instance, he should not be out there on that Yamaha. Last weekend, he shouldn't have been out there doing that on the Yamaha. He is able to ride, and you'll see it too, because that's what's difficult is how much he pushes. In his 2021 championship, sorry, a little bit of back history here. In 2021 world championship, after he won it like round, he was still like six rounds out from the end, and he won the championship. So we had several races with Quartararo not caring, because he could wreck out every race and still win. He did not finish well in any of the races the rest of that season, which just goes to show how much he was pushing while he was looking for the championship win. And then you look at a race like today, and you'll watch him just fight and fight and fight. And the only time, like if you watch closely and you know the backstory and you're watching Quartararo for these reasons, you can watch him every turn gain time back because he breaks so late going into the turn, so late. You'll watch him. They're coming down that Ducati. They hit the straight. Ducati passes him, pulls. We hit the next turn. Here he is right on their tail. Follows him through the same corner speed. He has that ability. He is that quality rider or that caliber of rider. He can absolutely ride any bike and ride it well. He's proven that. And you can watch it in your day-to-day. You can watch it in turn-to-turn. He can still ride a bike. So, yes, I do think he could definitely go pick up a contract somewhere else if he wanted to. Sorry, long backstory for that one. But, if you come back over for another race, keep an eye on his late breaking techniques. Yeah. It is pretty.
Get more Quartararo drives.
I mean, now that I can say his name right, I gotta come back and put that to use.
Quartararo. You know why you can't say it right?
Quartararo.
He's French.
Oh.
Yeah.
Why have I been putting in this effort?
What did you find about?
Here comes Josh next weekend. Yeah, who's that Quartararo guy?
They all sound Spanish or Italian.
That's because most of them are Spanish or Italian.
Good. Yeah.
Quartararo. You got two Frenchmen. You got Johann Zarco and Fabio Quartararo, and that's it.
The hard part is that he's Fabio, but there's another Fabio.
DJ Antonio. That guy's Italian.
And he is Italian.
And look, listen to their names. Do they sound, you know?
Exactly. DJ Antonio.
See, that's why I miss. That's the only thing I miss about Rossi, because he had like Valentino Rossi was like the most Italian name ever. It was right up there with Spaghetti and Pirelli and Ducati and Rossi
and Ferrari.
And Ferrari, yeah. Right? Like it is just they're all Italian.
The Bologna Bullet.
Even I know Rossi.
Most people do.
Even I know that.
I've talked about this on the show before, and it's interesting having you here and you saying that. Because if I go ask anyone out in the normal world about motorcycle racing, and I mention a name like Marco Bezzecchi, they're not going to know.
Who's that?
Brad Binder. Jack Miller.
Oh, he's Australian. I know that much.
How about this?
Name of Jack.
Juan Mir. Fabio Quartararo. Okay, you know now.
Well, I didn't know his first name was Fabio. But.
Okay. Pecco Bagnaia, Jorge Martin.
I know him.
Those are the champions because of this decade.
That's...
Each of those names is a world champion this decade. 2020, 21, 22, 22, and 23.
I'm maybe 10% hitting.
Or 24.
On those guys you just said.
Right. So that is very normal, because no one follows MotoGP. Right. Which, cool, whatever. Valentino Rossi, people know.
Yep.
They know that name. Can you tell me anything about him? What bike did he ride?
No.
Cool. It's interesting to me. And this is part of also
Yamaha.
You know Mark Marquez. You would know the Mark Marquez name.
Yes, the Japanese bike.
Yeah, he was on the Yamaha. He went to Ducati for a little bit. Did very bad with it. Could not ride it, and went back to Yamaha. But yeah, it's interesting. Valentino Rossi was also one that, much like Mark Marquez, knew how to play the game on the outside. And he anytime they do a championship win, they'll have a winning celebration now, which is like this big crazy show. Like when Quartararo won, this weird devil cartoon projected thing came out, because he's the
like MotoGP puts on a celebration
or his team or whoever. Yeah, his name, his nickname is El Diablo. So he had this big old dancing devil thing came out. Jorge Martin had some
Terminator
thing last year. Yeah. So like they have these huge celebrations that all started with Rossi. Like Rossi was a big like, I'm gonna play to the fans. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna build this up. I'm gonna make this fun. It's not just riding motorcycles anymore. So I think that is part of the reason why everyone knows the name Rossi. Also, he was iconic. He's an icon still. His name will go down in history forever.
Oh, VR46. That's his team, by the way.
Yeah, those yellow Ducatis are owned by Valentino Rossi.
Oh,
he has a MotoGP team, okay. So he's still in the game.
Too. Was he also like kind of like. Michael Schumacher is like, he is a name known outside of F1 by people. They're just like, oh yeah, Schumacher. He like drove cars or something, right?
Yes. Yes.
Like how someone would react to that.
Yes.
But like, not only was Michael Schumacher like big name, the Marlboro driver, like crazy talented, successful, but he was also off the track, very popular. Was it the same with Rossi? Was he also a really good rider?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Multi championships.
Yeah. Okay. He's a, what, 9-time?
Wow.
MotoGP.
Yeah, man's got sauce.
Schumacher. Or maybe not MotoGP, but the interesting part about Rossi is that he is so old, he's been through multiple different bike size changes. Like, he rode the 500cc two strokes. He also went through different riding style changes. This whole, like, dragon knee thing, there's a different way that they did it back in the day where they would stick their butt off, keep the front end of their body on.
Oh.
And kind of counterbalance like that. And then... kind of around when Mark Marquez came in, they started to shift and move the shoulders over, or at least that was a different new style. He went through two big, like, style changes that other riders were doing.
When did Rossi stop riding?
In 2020?
Wow.
Yeah.
I believe.
Wow.
Somewhere around
maybe
there.
Maybe even 2021. He rode for Yamaha for a long time.
Wow.
They kept giving him a ride. He finally ended up going to the satellite Yamaha because they were like, hey, you're not doing that great anymore. We kind of need you to step down. And he was like, okay. So he rode with Petronas for a little bit. Had a really, really bad final season. Like, it really didn't go well. That bike actually caught fire a few times, I believe. Yeah, it was rough.
There's actually a really cool video overlap. It was like Rossi and Hamilton back when they were both with Petronas Yamaha and Petronas Mercedes.
Mm-hmm. Well, him and Lewis Hamilton actually have a pretty big history. They've swapped machines before. They went and rented a track for the weekend, and Hamilton rode his bike. And Rossi drove the car.
Whoa.
And then there was another, that was a different guy. But there was a time where they raced an F1 car versus MotoGP. That was kind of cool to watch because they gave the car a huge advantage and the car still won. F1 is definitely faster than MotoGP.
But yeah, I mean, top speed. Yeah, obviously top speed.
Well,
yeah.
Even corner speed is where it actually gets them. That's the big one.
I mean, we don't, if,
less
like,
risk.
F1,
less
like,
risk versus more risk.
There's no, like, you're not changing the angle of the vehicle to accomplish, like, grip. So yeah, it's just a lot of, yeah, exactly. You're just.
He's got it. He's got it.
I love that, man. You go into a corner and they just like the ABMS themselves, and then just right out of it. You just you can see the lights filling up the steering wheel as they go.
Yeah,
I do enjoy watching the
shift up to eighth. That's awesome. I love that about F1. Yeah,
it was a good time. The scream. Yeah. MotoGP is pretty much like that.
I'll say, so the only that I was trying to think about, like, why, because watching MotoGP for me is a little less exciting than watching Formula One, and I think it's because the riders are so casual during overtakes.
In MotoGP.
Like, really? It seems so, not casual, maybe not the right word.
It's because you can't hit the onboard.
It seems so relaxed.
Yeah.
When they pass, like, they'll be inches away, centimeters away from the next nearest rider, and they'll just swing out, and suddenly they're, like, in front. Whereas in F1, it's like, sometimes they'll go around the outside, go around the inside, and there is so much risk. And I don't know why it's just different in the body language of the car versus the motorcycle. But the motorcycle, it almost seems like the decision was made before the corner started. And they swing around and they pass.
You should have seen one of the races last year, Jorge Martin and Bagnaia, when they didn't even race like that. And those first two left, I thought they were both going to crash each other out, like the way they were going back and forth.
Objectively, yeah. Like, you look at like that fight for third and fourth with Marky Marquez. Like, you look at that and those two bikes are like... right next to each other.
The amount of times that a dude's knee is resting on someone else's bike.
There's a few times like they'll lean in. That's so you're saying they'll come up. You'll have somebody else's front tire mark on your leathers.
You're saying that it's rough for you because it doesn't, like, they don't portray how crazy that actually is.
I think it's the shaking of the onboard camera in an F1 car. The shaking makes the car feel like
it's unstable.
Through the camera, it's like unstable, but the bikes are so smooth.
They're not.
That you don't, at least like from the camera, looks so smooth that the bike will like lean in, and then, because like every time they do shake, it's like those are the moments where I'm like, whoa, what is going on? Like the rear will just start flapping.
Yeah.
Like while they're on, like they're even going through a corner or going on a straight, it'll just start flapping. And those are the moments where you're like, whoa, what is happening? Right. What is about to happen? And that's like sensational, like there's like a crash like literally around the corner, and then somehow they'll just ride through it.
Yeah, like,
and those
like
moments
are all when you have that big
car.
Shaky.
We got it.
John, I wonder if that wasn't from his ride height device also just earlier.
I think that happened when he was coming out of a corner.
It could have been.
And the rear started doing that.
Yeah. So that's an interesting point, and I'll give you that. I would say I would challenge you to come over and watch more. One, to get to know the riders, and then two, because I do think that different camera angles at different times can portray that a lot better and can kind of give you a little bit more of it. Because they have a shoulder cam, they have a bike cam, they have a front of bike cam, rear of bike cam.
Similar to F1, how you can pick your view you want to pick. You can do the same thing with MotoGP, and you can pick like specific rider cams, and like the front forward-facing camera or the rear-facing camera, when someone's coming up behind somebody or they're in front of somebody trying to overtake them, that does give you more of the, like,
The rear-facing, when there's a bike coming in and you watch him almost clip that rear tire because he's just coming in so hot, that, I think, is a good... That's a good view. That's great.
That could make all the difference, I think, then, for sure. I think maybe F1 TV... I think they hit the strategic level of, like, we have to make this, like, a dramatic experience.
Yeah.
I think they might have been one of the first motorsport, at least, like, big, like, global motorsport, it seems like... companies like really latch on to this. Let's make this like almost a movie,
right? Well, because you have to
watch like into the action.
Pure racing fans are not a big enough group of people to make money. Like, it's just not. So you have to make it something
entertaining. I also say like F1 sort of kind of like a modern rebrand in recent years. Ever since Liberty Media took them over, and then like made it like more reachable to the general public.
Yes.
Do you know who just took over MotoGP?
Spoiler alert.
Liberty Media. Okay, so we could start seeing that, like,
possibly. What's funny about that is the controversy between like people that understand why it's good for the sport, and then people that are the pure race fans that are like, well, I know there's only me and five other people that actually just enjoy this for what it is, but it needs to stay that, and they don't. It is huge controversy. They all hate Liberty Media because they think they're going to ruin it, just like F1 got ruined.
I'll admit, like, there F1 are obviously some.
It's the most popular it's been ever, making the most money it's been. ever, and we finally got three tracks grand. And say what you want about Las Vegas, but we finally got three tracks in America. Like, we're finally doing stuff.
Yeah, see, everyone in Europe hates tracks in America.
They had them except for Coda. They had the monopoly on American
tracks. That's weird, because MotoGP is the complete opposite.
They hate
really? Coda is like the most hated track.
Yeah, but MotoGP doesn't race in Las Vegas or Miami, do they?
No.
See, that's why. Miami and Las Vegas are the worst tracks on the planet.
Yeah. That makes sense. But so, yeah, they won't do any road racing.
Which honestly, the road races in F1
are pointless.
Are objectively the worst races.
They're just traditional.
100%. Some of them, it's obviously for the location. Some of them aren't bad. I think Bahrain is a road race, but they built the road to be an F1 track. They just also let people use the track when it's not an F1 race.
Yeah.
So it is still a great track. But for MotoGP, I'll say one thing that as a non-MotoGP fan, I do love about MotoGP is they're shorter.
Mm-hmm.
And then like you were saying, the fact that you can have multiple bikes abreast means that every corner, if you've got more than one rider within half second of each other, every corner is going to be exciting.
Yeah.
You have no idea.
Absolutely. I think that's what killed me about F1 and why, even if I knew the drivers, I think that's all that would ever pull me in is having the emotional attachment to a driver for F1. I think it's because I started with MotoGP. And so that excitement of every single corner you go into is it. And the other thing too, is that when a bike goes out, as soon as your pit leaves the grid, you're on your own. The only communication you get is your pit board, and they're allowed to send a couple messages to tell you to remap your bike. But you're on your own. You're not getting new fuel. You're not getting new tires. You're not getting, hey, this guy's right on your six. You should block past him or whatever. You're not getting any of that information.
You're not getting team orders.
You get a quick, down the main straight, when you're doing 280 miles an hour, you have a board to look at that says, Pecco's behind you plus 0.2. Which he might not even be plus 0.2 anymore. He might be right behind you. Mm-hmm. He might have already passed you at that point. Because they're just looking at that and they're like, okay, all right. Hey, all right, and that's it.
Get the letters all right.
You happen to, and you know how much F1 drivers are doing in their car the entire time while they're driving, engaging all this different stuff. MotoGP is doing all of that also. So you think about I just think it amazes me what they actually do while they're out there riding and how little they
that's
know.
That's crazy. I did not know that. So they have battery cycling with their bikes. They do all that
changing all your ride settings and stuff
That's crazy that they're doing that.
So on F1, you're changing brake bias, ride settings, drink machine, all that stuff. Then you're juggling the whole battery cycling and whatnot, DRS, all that stuff. But you also got team radio coming in.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I had this thought earlier. But the ride height thing, that's definitely MotoGP's version of DRS.
Interesting. Okay.
A function, a physical function of the bike that you change on the straight specifically to get more speed.
Yeah, okay. I'll give you that. Sweet. Well, boys, I do think... I don't have a watch, but I've been looking at yours. Thanks for having that right there.
You're welcome.
I think it's about time. It's usually where I end up looking, but this happened to be... It was just right there. It was nice. But I think it's about time we close up. And are you coming back? Are you going to watch another one?
You know what? I think I will.
Okay.
Maybe I'll hold off on promising anything until I've had these ribs.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't want you to feel like you've already paid for it, make sure there's still some steak involved, pun intended, but definitely to watch MotoGP for sure.
Okay.
Especially with you guys. It makes such a big difference having...
That is true.
Heartbreak as both Marquez's go off track.
Yeah. Just the oh and the what. Those moments are what make racing fun to watch.
All right,
sweet. All right. Well, hey, audience. Hopefully you guys appreciated. We brought in a European, non-European, British F1 fan, Josh, to get a little bit of perspective from the outside world and see what exactly he thinks of what we do here and what our guys are doing. Hopefully you guys enjoyed. Appreciate you guys listening and or watching. Once again, please subscribe to the YouTube channel if you haven't already, and go follow us on your favorite podcast listening platform, be it any of the platforms that I'm not going to mention because there's way too many and I don't remember all their names. Apple Podcast.
Spotify.
There you go. You can use Apple Podcasts.
Spotify's good, yeah.
Yep, iHeartRadio, all those great ones. But we appreciate you watching. We will see you guys in about 2 weeks for the next round of MotoGP, which will be... Spain.
Definitely not.
Maybe. Hang on. It will be Aragon, Spain.
That is Spain.
Oh, which is going to be great.
Oh,
it's going to be so great.
That's going to look like.
It's going to be so great. We won't give any spoilers out, but go watch last year and see how this year's going to go with a different guy on a better bike. I'll leave it with that. Thanks for listening. We'll see you guys in the next episode.
Ground at 100 miles an hour.